Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'll start with a last minute addition to the 4th and 15 rule that we have talked about, replacing the onside kick. First of all, I'll tell you our need to know brought to you by our friends at Hen House. Go to henhouse.com to see the weekly specials. You can also get signed up for their weekly email. That's what we get at my house. Both my wife and I get it on our phones. And every time you walk into Hen House, you just open that email and you've got all the specials. Make sure you never miss on anything. Make sure you got your Hen House card as well. Hen House has been serving Kansas City for 97 years, locally owned and operated. Hen House has you covered, especially back at the meat counter. It's grilling season. Get to the meat counter at Hen House to make sure you got the best cuts of meat on your grill tonight, tomorrow night, this weekend, whenever that might be. I mentioned the 4th and 15 rule. Quick change that they made to it as they're putting it forward. Untimed down on the 4th and 15. It will be an untimed down. Why is that significant?
Right off the hand, I can't think of a reason. You clearly have one, but I don't know what it would be.
Well, if you have a strong-armed quarterback, wouldn't that seem to behoove you if you have just one untimed down to be able to throw the ball?
I guess so.
If you score with 1 second left, right? It's an untimed down for the extra point. You then get an untimed play.
Field goal range.
From your, 25 they're going to go from, I think is where it is.
Yep.
And so you got to go, you're going to have to get it out to the 40 just to be able to stay on the field. And if it's an untimed down, then I assume that the clock stays stopped, right? Obviously, that's the untimed part, is that the clock's, it's stopped. But I don't think they're going to wind it when a guy gets tackled, right? It would seemingly start with the next snap.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you convert for a first down. Let's say you get it out to your 48. You hit the guy at the 40, he runs 8 yards, he's tackled, you're at the 48. One, if you've got a long kicker, who can take it a long way, you can line up a 66-yard field goal right there. Maybe he gets it to the other side, right? You see my point here. He's going to get to wherever it is. Maybe you convert it out to the other team's 30, right? You get a catch and run, or you just throw a bomb and he catches it. You're at the other team's 30. You can line up a field goal and kick it right there.
Or maybe if there's 15 seconds left, you get a chance for one.
But I'm just saying the worst. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it grows from there.
That's great.
It's basically a free play in the drive to try to score.
Wow, that's interesting.
It means that with 1 second, you've got two plays.
Defensive
coordinators have got to hate it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's tough enough to stop the best quarterbacks as good as they are, and that's what most of the time. You're going to see this happen. There's going to be teams that think they got a shot to do it, unless it's desperation, and then I guess every team would do it in that situation. But, it's tough enough to stop these modern NFL quarterbacks. Just give them a free play.
And if you're a defensive coordinator, think about it. How are you going to play it? Are you going to play it where you're super aggressive, doing everything you can to beat them on that down, or are you going to say, listen, keep them in front of us, we're going to play prevent, and I don't care if they get another one, just keep them on that side of the 50.
Yeah, that's probably, if it's one or it's less than 4 or 5 seconds, if it's like a situation where there's only one play after that, then I would play it that way. I would not play aggressive. I would try to keep them in front of the midfield stripe.
Either way, it opens up the game and makes it more offensive.
Oh, yeah.
Because either you go hell bent to try to stop them, which means you're going to be more aggressive, and they got a better chance of getting somebody loose and making a big play.
Advantage Kansas City.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Now, hopefully, in reality, is the Chiefs aren't going to need it a lot because they're good, so they should be winning a bunch.
Twice.
But they've had to come from behind. Yeah, they've had to come from behind, even with Patrick Mahomes. See the left-handed throw game.
Down 10 in the fourth. They had to score in the last drive. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but they're usually, I will say this, the one thing, they're not down two scores ever.
No, they have, at least not for the last 3 years.
So what it more likely ends up being like, okay, maybe we'll settle for the field goal here and then just go ahead and go for the onside kick.
Yes, it'll be very interesting to see how teams fold this wrinkle into their end game strategy. Because it does more than just affect the last drive. It affects how aggressive they are in the drive before that. So I love it. Anything that adds a new wrinkle is entertaining to me. And the fact that the team I root for is poised to take advantage of it most often, but per attempt take the most advantage of it. I'm down with it. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's awesome as well. I think it's really, I think it's going to be great for the league. And I think, 5 or 10 years down the road, we'll be like, why didn't we do this sooner?
Yeah, and it's certainly better than what we've done the last couple of years, where it's just there was just no chance. If you needed the ball to get the ball back after scoring, forget it. You weren't doing it.
Yeah, I think this is going to be great for the league, and I think it's real football. It's not some gimmick. You're just playing football. If anything, the gimmicks are the kicks, right? This is the more of the game. So you're getting the real game. I think it's going to be great. And I like the untimed down, too. I think it's fun. Yeah.
Someone's going to parlay that rule into a last 15 seconds victory, and it's going to be amazing. It's going to be the topic, for a week, and that's – I think that's cool. I love it.
A lot of debate going on right now with the NBA. It looks like they're getting closer to starting things up, but how to do it, how to finish the season. We got the NHL's official word yesterday that 7 of the 31 teams will not play. 24 will. 5 plays 12, 6 plays 11, so on and so forth, with 1 through 4. Right, is that? Yeah, and
then right.
1 through
yeah.
4 get byes. On each side in the NHL, don't know what the NBA is going to do. It looks like Disney, the bubble, going to try to create a safe bubble at Disney. Adrian Wojnarowski talking on ESPN today. ESPN's NBA insider said the league needs to give bubble teams a chance to make the playoffs.
They want the key players on the court, and to do that, they've got to create a scenario here where a team like Portland, who's only 3.5 games back from the 8th seed in the West, along with a couple other teams, that they'll have an ability to get to the playoffs. And whether that's in a play-in tournament or a pool play scenario, in addition to regular season games, that's going to be a motivator for teams to put their key players back on the floor.
I think this is interesting. You said they need to have all the teams play. We were talking about this earlier. Like, had the Royals, were this going on with the baseball season last year, with the Royals barreling towards 100 losses, would you have been adamant that we got to see 2 more weeks of Royals baseball?
No. That was.
I mean, I
thought that way in the end of July. 2 more months of baseball.
I get the idea that you want to re-engage your fan base, all of your fan base. I do. I kind of like the idea of basketball, where tournaments are such a part of the framework of basketball at every level, all the way up until you get to professional basketball. You play tournament style ball at the end of the year. I think it lends itself to a tournament. If you want to stick everybody into a tournament to re-engage your fans, I think that's fine. But like, the NHL looked at it and said, listen, down through 24, we can make a case that these teams kind of had a shot. The bottom 7, they suck. And there's no point in giving them a chance, right? So let's just end their season, be out of it, and then we'll go with this format to re-engage most of the fan base. But you were not going to re-engage Royals fans at the end of last year, right? So any of the bottom-feeding NBA teams, their fan base is not going to re-engage off some games that are going to send them nowhere. And, Damian Lillard made it clear as a player, if you don't think you've got a legitimate shot of getting into postseason, then why would you re-engage? He says he's not going to play. But a tournament, and maybe if you're like, listen, we don't want to see like the 30th best team in the league just have a night and knock out the 5th best team in the league or 9th best team in the league. Okay, I got it. Then maybe you make it a double elimination, or maybe you just make the tournament about the bottom of the barrel. Single elimination, bottom 8 teams, let's play ball. Top 22 advance, bottom 8 go. We play, down to, the top 2. However you want to do it to get down to that final spot.
Yeah, I would prefer something closer to the hockey word. Maybe not just the 16, but there's a few more to to kind of have that intro into it. But I thought what Brian Windhorst, I think it was him, said that yesterday about the 16-team scenario and the ability to, you would require less testing. Maybe kind of split the difference? I think having every team out there is probably too many, but I think you could have, I don't agree with him, you can only have 16 teams. He said it was the only logical option. I think you can have more than 16, but I wouldn't want to have everybody out there. There's no reason for that from my perspective.
All right, here's Jalen Rose, says having more teams in the playoffs will be better for the league.
We have to drum up enthusiasm for the start of the league, and you want as many players and as many fan bases engaged as possible. People are starving for sports. When it returns, now you need some storylines. We know LeBron James is going to be there. The Clippers are going to be there. Giannis is going to be there. But the key to selling this thing is to get as many people as possible. And things like tournaments and pool play, that creates a level of enthusiasm for the return and ultimately becomes your red carpet as you start the playoffs.
The only way the 15-50 Warriors or the 19-45 Timberwolves or the 19-46 Cavaliers have a storyline is if they're in a single elimination. Well, if the Warriors get all their people back, then that could be intriguing. But they can't just be coming back to play games that are meaningless because nobody will care.
Yeah.
And the only way you can make it meaningful is have enough games that you can, you know, say like, well, they, you know, 10, 15, get, you know, play it out to 82. I don't think that's an option. I don't think you can get enough games to re-engage those teams. The only thing you can do is to have a tournament to where they can actually win their way into the playoffs.
Yeah, and he said something that on the first pass I thought seemed contradictory in that, you know, when it comes back, everyone's going to be excited about it coming back, but you need storylines to make them excited, I think. I think they can go quite a while without storylines because it will be the NBA for the first time in however many months. I think they can last quite a while on that until by the time that excitement wears off, if it's just 16 teams. By the time that excitement of the newness wears off, you're going to be in the final, you know, the conference finals or the conference semifinals maybe, and you won't have to worry about it. But I'd like to have a few more added teams. I like that idea of a play-in thing, but I don't think it's necessary.
I don't think it's necessary, but I'd like to see it. I'd like to see just what the tournament feel does. Do they go out? Do they give it their all? Is it entertaining? Or I just like to see them do it. Like I said, this is a year where you get a get-out-of-jail-free card. You can try anything you've ever wanted. I like the idea of a midseason tournament, you know, kind of like a U.S. Open Cup. Where midseason, okay, we see the teams wherever they are from the midseason, or maybe it's last year, or however it is. Maybe it's just by random draw, and you play a tournament, and you have a tournament champion that year. I think that would be fun around the All-Star break to have that kind of tournament, and I love the idea of a Champions League where, you know, four NBA teams are going up against the four best, or maybe two, however many, Spanish teams and teams from Greece, and you know, you get a full – you know, Champions League. I think that would be a lot of fun. I think it's been a big hit in soccer, and I think it'd be great in basketball as well. And I think this is a chance to get a feel for what it would be like. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. Seth Walder from ESPN, he handles the analytics there. Has written a great piece. Chiefs are the favorite for the Super Bowl, but by what percentage, and who are the other teams there? We'll talk to Seth Walder from ESPN next here on the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
You're wonderful. I would listen to you every day. And what would this world be without you? You have just done so much for all of us, and I thank you very much.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we talk some NFL football. Joining us now, Seth Walder from ESPN, brought to you by my friends at All Weather Decks, Kansas City's best and now largest deck company. If you don't have that outdoor living space that you want to enjoy some time with your family, get it right now. All Weather Decks. Call Cass and his guys at 913-206-1974. Find them online at allweatherdecks.net. Seth, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the time. Welcome to our Sprint guest line. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing very good, and certainly we're always excited when we see the Chiefs listed at the top, and love the work you do with the analytics and love the numbers. Who doesn't in sports? So much of it is out there right now, and you do great stuff, and we love seeing that the Chiefs are the favorite to win the Super Bowl. I don't think that shocks people, but I think what shocks people is when they think of a favorite, they assume that, oh, if they're the favorite, they're like 75% to win the championship. The Chiefs are the favorite. But that means they win it 21% of the time right now, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's actually, you know, for the NFL, which is a league that has quite a bit of parity, that's a pretty strong favorite. So we've been doing preseason projections since the 2015 season, and this is the second strongest favorite that we've had in that span. In 2017, we had the Patriots all the way at 32%, but that was a real outlier. This is the second strongest favorite in that time. We had the Chiefs also as a favorite last preseason, but it was, I believe it was 15% going into that year. So 21%, that's a pretty strong endorsement from the model of this Chiefs team, which undoubtedly deserves to be the favorite, I think.
Yeah, and you know, is it because the game is the reason why they're the favorite is because the game is so offensive heavy, right? The Baltimore Ravens had the best record in the AFC. Listen, call me a homer, and it sounds great saying this after the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, but people who listen to the program know that I said during the course of the year, I'm like, I still think the Chiefs are the best team. They had a bunch of injuries that they fought through and came through that period at 6-4 and started getting healthy once their last six games, and then won all three playoff games. I know everybody talks about coming back from double digits down, but they actually won all three games by double digits. And I don't think that gets played quite as much as it probably should for the Chiefs. But the Ravens had the better record. They've had a phenomenal offseason. It does scare me how I love their draft and I love their offseason moves that they've put together. But is reality that analytics can now account for the fact that the quarterback is 51% of everything you do in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it really is. It is offense first. I think offense is not just most important in season, but year to year, offense is more consistent from team to team, or from year to year, I should say, for a single team. And so when you're strong on offense, that gives the model greater confidence that you're going to be a good team or going to be good on offense again, win, therefore a good team again. The Chiefs have the best offense, right? And to your point, we do expect that the Ravens will have a very good defense and a better defense than the Chiefs. And I think we have the Chiefs with like the 21st best defense going into this season. But when you are the best offense, it makes up for so much that it does make Kansas City the favorite. We do have Baltimore number two as both the second best team and second most likely to win the Super Bowl. So it's not a lot of shade thrown at the Ravens. But yes, to boil it down, offense is important. And also, I do want to just say, like you mentioned, you know, with Patrick Mahomes, we have multiple years of performance that gives you greater confidence of that sort of sustained level of play. Lamar Jackson was unbelievable, but we're talking about one breakout season. It's probably a little more uncertainty about him, though I still think, you know, expectations for that team ought to be, and Lamar Jackson ought to be sky high.
No, I agree. I'll get back to the Ravens in a second. You mentioned the Chiefs defense, and yet I'm at what, 21-22 overall?
Yeah.
Defense?
Last year, I want to say 21st. Yep.
Okay. Last year, they were 17th in yards allowed, which is kind of the traditional way of measuring it. And then everyone gets all excited and, well, points. It's, you know, the game scored with points. Okay. Yes. Yards are actually a better indicator sometimes, or maybe most of the time, of future success than necessarily points. They did finish as the seventh best defense in the NFL points allowed. What do you make of that? Why does that not connect? Obviously the yards does. And it seems like perhaps the formula takes more into account yards than maybe the point factor. How do you tie those all together?
I wouldn't use either of those measures, actually. What I would do is we use something called efficiency, but it's really just expected points added per play, and then we downweight garbage time. So what I mean by that is for the broader audience, basically all football analytics these days boils down to what we expected points added, so which is essentially another way of measuring production in place of yards. what we're really doing is saying, instead of saying yards where you say, well, the play gained 5 yards, that can mean different things. If it's 3rd and 4 and you gain 5 yards, then that's a really important 5 yards. If it's 3rd and 10 and you gain 5 yards, that's not very important. And so what expected points data does is it puts that context around yards gained and says how much did it matter. So we instead use EPA rather than yards and do it on a per play basis. And that way you also avoid and put in the garbage time. That way you also avoid problems where you have the Chiefs maybe getting out to a big lead and then they're willing to play a softer defense or allow some points at the end of the game. In the end, it happens that the Chiefs finished 17th in defensive efficiency last year. So it happens to match up with yards. And if you made me choose between the two, I would say always choose yards. But I still think that neither measure is a great way to do it. But I do think that there is a good evidence that the Chiefs were a middle-of-the-pack defense last year.
With an offense that scored as many points as they did, wouldn't that seemingly have opened up more garbage time and more superfluous yards and points allowed by the Chiefs?
Absolutely. So that's why we would want to use something like efficiency, where we're doing it on a per play basis. So we're doing per play, but making garbage time plays count for less. So we're just down weighting them, and so that helps adjust for the fact that the Chiefs might look worse or something because of garbage time, and that way you just get a better read on who actually is performing well. So I think the Chiefs are a perfect team to think about that.
And I think, you know, I do think their schedule kind of softened up coming down the stretch for them last year. But the playoffs are the playoffs, right? You're beating playoff teams. Mm-hmm. And the one game that they gave up 31 points, 14 of them were handed away by the special teams, a block punt and a muff punt that set up point blank to go for the Texans. How much of that, and listen, you don't get a poo-poo away. Well, one was a blown coverage. I know, that's called defense. Don't blow the coverage. That's an accurate measure. Most Chiefs fans want to take that one off the board as well for when Fuller was completely uncovered and streaking down the field. But you know, there is like those teams that consistently, like Andy Reid, consistently across the board, his point rankings outperform his yard rankings. And I do get the value per play and you know, a yard's not a yard. I understand all that, but just from a 30,000 foot view for a casual fan to look at, one thing that is real, coaches that always outperform, you know, rank higher points ranking wise, offense and defense, which Andy Reid does on both sides of the ball, almost across the board. He has every single season offensively, his points outrank his yards. I mean, there is something to what they're doing, right? They figured out what the important yards are, to your point, and they get those important yards. And Andy Reid and this team and even on the defensive side of the ball, they seem to understand that, don't they?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think if I'm thinking about it defensively, one reason why you might have a disconnect between yards and points with someone like Andy Reid is that Andy Reid often is coaching a very good offense. And one of the problems with using points is that, like you mentioned, points can be generated by other units in the game. And I'm not just talking about when you throw a pick six, but also just if you throw an interception and now the other team is starting a drive in field goal range. That's the kind of thing that shows up when you look at EPA, but it's not going to show up in the traditional points metric where, yeah, you throw that pick and now they're starting at your 20 and all they have to do is go 20 yards and score a touchdown. That's points allowed on offense effectively. Andy Reid's often got a very good offense. He's not going to give up those kinds of points as often. So I think that's one way. It hadn't really occurred to me that you would have consistency on offense that way. I don't know. I'd have to think about the points, yards, inconsistency that you're talking about on offense. See, but I do think that's another example of why you need better measures of that. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. You're our guest, and I want to hear what you have to say, Seth. We're talking to Seth Walder here. Does a fantastic job with ESPN's analytics. He's got a great piece up there. You'll love it as a Chiefs fan reading about it, and it kind of stacks the NFL on what to expect. So I really encourage you to go take a look at it. You know, Eric Eager at Pro Football Focus is a good friend of the program, and we talked to him, and he wrote a piece at the Super Bowl when we were there. My God, doesn't that seem like years ago? But when we were there in Miami, and he wrote a piece basically saying Andy Reid's the best coach in the NFL. Now, full disclosure, I don't know if you know Eric or not, but he's a Chiefs fan, so you know, maybe some red and gold glasses led him to the numbers that looked good. But one of the things he talked about, and I had never, kind of like you, like, okay, how do I get my arms around why Andy Reid does this? You know, he said the field position is Andy Reid always has better field position. Like, he seems to be the guy who can dial up the really good plays when he needs it, right? He doesn't waste them when he's up big. I think one of the criticisms of Andy Reid of taking his foot off the gas too early, you know, is probably fair, because I think he does want to leave things on the shelf. Like, I've got enough to get there. I'm not going to show them anything else. Where a Mike Martz, like, look at all my toys. Look at everything I've got here, right? I'm up, but here's another new toy. Andy Reid leaves it on the shelf. It'll be there when I need it. I'll go get it. But he always does a great job coming out. Like, the Chiefs are never punting with their punters' heels on the back of the end zone. They do a fantastic job of getting at least out to midfield and pinning the other team down, and that's been Dustin Colquitt's specialty. You know, coming down the stretch run of his career with the Chiefs was that he would pin the other team down inside the 20. I mean, that's just flat out good coaching, right? I mean, those are the little things that make for a great coach. I know the narrative for so long has been Andy Reid's a boob. He can't win the big one, which I think is going to be completely debunked.
I think
now.
He might have disproven that one.
Yeah. Listen, I said this for a while because I would sit and watch him with Alex Smith, who is a good quarterback. You want to call him very good, fine, but he's a fine quarterback is what I'd call him. And the biggest mistake that Andy Reid made during the Alex Smith era was giving him too much money, because he's not that good. Yet Andy Reid was still a top five offense. And people talked about his clock management, and what would drive me crazy is, like, okay, you look at the drive chart and you say, well, he got it at 151 and he had two timeouts, and then they didn't score. What you didn't see was Alex Smith run for three. Alex Smith checked down to the running back. Alex Smith not throw it 25 yards down the field to the wide open guy and play it too safe. And now he's got the kid that will do that, and everybody suddenly writes that Andy Reid's figured it out. He's changed. He's gotten smarter. No. He got the ultimate weapon. He got the quarterback. That's the guy that makes it go. And so, listen, Patrick Mahomes is going to get a ton of credit. He deserves a ton of credit. But I hope that people will see Andy Reid for the brilliant coach that he is as well.
So I like Eric a lot. I do know him, and super smart guy. So I didn't read the story, but I trust his analysis. I'm very interesting about Reid in the field position, and I think it would make sense. Yeah, I think I could absolutely see that. I will say one thing that just kind of popped in my head when you were saying that is talking about, like, Dustin Colquitt, and you know, one thing that the Chiefs almost always have is, a weapon in Dave Taub, I think.
Yeah.
So we have this, like I mentioned, efficiency, right? We also have it for special teams. Since 2006, you know, all the way since 2006, right? So we have, it goes back. Dave Taub, every year that he's been a special teams coordinator, both Chiefs and with the Bears, he finished, you know, his unit finished in the top six in special teams until last season. The streak broke last year. But that's unbelievable, remarkable consistency when you're talking about special teams, which is, right, notoriously inconsistent, not that many plays. You have all sorts of different phases within it. So I do think that also probably helps the Chiefs have good field position because he's just elite at that. Now, that being said, the streak broke last year, and they still went on to win the Super Bowl. But I do think that's a one thing that they always had going for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things – and you guys, by the way, at ESPN, I don't remember who wrote it, and maybe it was a compilation of folks, wrote a piece a couple of years ago ranking the best special teams of all time, and Dave Tobe had like 7 of 20 of them, and for three different franchises, right? I mean, it's like, it's undeniable. He's the greatest special teams coach that has ever lived in the NFL. When you looked at that, the way you guys quantified it, it was unreal. But that's part of being a coach, right? Like, Andy Reid gets that value. And so he not only has Dave Tobe, he makes him an assistant head coach, which makes it impossible to hire the guy away unless you're going to make him a head coach.
I'm surprised he hasn't gotten head coach looks, because we've done this, we've done like an article. I don't think we did last year, but we did the previous two, where they asked us, like, pick five people who are currently not NFL head coaches and that you would want to hire if you were, if you were an owner. And Dave Tobe was always on my list. I think he's got, how could you not want to take a long look at a guy that has mastered, an under-the-radar part of the game, yes, a overall less important part of the game, but someone who has mastered it so thoroughly that he can get that consistent result. To me, that's fascinating that he's been able to do that.
Yeah, no, he looks like John Harbaugh. Now, I know John Harbaugh had a couple of years, one or two years as a secondary coach in between being a special teams coach, but he's got the Andy Reid playbook, which we know has been successful for so many great assistants. I'm with you. I actually think, listen, and I think Eric Bieniemy should be a head coach. And I had this conversation. I asked Coach Reid this on our last Zoom press conference, because I think Bieniemy's kind of a reluctant, tip of the sword on the Rooney Rule and more African American head coaches. But I actually think if I were an owner, he'd be my third choice off the Chiefs coaching staff. Dave Tobe and Steve Spagnuolo in some order would be 1-2.
Interesting. I would rather have Bieniemy than Spagnuolo.
I think Steve Spagnuolo, everyone tells me he's not going to get a shot, and I hope they're right, because I'm happy with him as a defensive coordinator. Because if the defense isn't that good, yet they were able to come up every time they needed to come up big in this postseason run and in their stretch run, then it's okay. Is it all talent? Is it all the guys? Because their cap would say they're only paying a couple of guys on that defensive side of the ball. Then it must be the guy. And he has a little bit of Andy Reid in him, in the sense that he dials up something you haven't seen at the time that he really needs it. He's always got something back. And that, to me, is Belichickian. Those are the great coaches that have something in reserve when they got to have it. That, I think he's underrated. We'll see. I mean, maybe he falls flat on his face this year when it's all said and done. I'm curious. So I believe what I said about the Ravens last year, and you tell me if this will be true. I think John Harbaugh is a good enough coach, and the coaching staff is good enough, and the talent is good enough that they can definitely win the Super Bowl. But they play Marty Schottenheimer football, right? My opinion was, until Lamar Jackson is a better pure passer of the ball, a guy who can just straight drop back, like they're not coming from 24-0 down in Baltimore, ever. Not right now. Not unless he takes a big step forward. And it may not always be 24, but usually in one postseason game, you've got to face some real adversity. You're staring at a negative 10 differential, and you got to flat out throw it and do it. I said the Ravens last year, I said, here's why the Ravens won't win. I've seen this movie. It's called Marty Schottenheimer. And I know how it ends. It ends with a playoff loss. And the Titans are the exact same team. I don't see the team in the AFC, unless the Texans get it together, and everybody hates what Bill O'Brien's been doing personnel-wise here. If you subscribe to that theory a little bit, that those run, and play defense teams, I mean, Bill Cowher finally had to take his head out and throw the football a little bit to get over the hump. Those teams don't win in the NFL.
I do not agree with that.
Okay.
Philosophy. Let me throw this one at you. If you look at performance on pass plays last season, so I'm going to take out scrambles. So when I just say pass play, I'm saying a pass, a sack, or a scramble. But I take out scrambles. So I'm taking away their best, this weapon that they have, right? Jackson's scrambling ability. But I'll leave in sacks because that's a quarterback issue. Who led the NFL in EPA per play on those plays? The Ravens. So to me, I don't think and would the Chiefs have been number one if Mahomes had played all 16 games? Yeah, maybe. But either way, they would be right there. And I think Baltimore is I think Baltimore is an exceptional team. I do not doubt their ability to come back in games when they run. And I'm an analytics guy, so you know that I am not going to be here talking about how great the running game is. But when you run as effectively as they do, and you have an overall offense as effective as they have or they had last season, you absolutely can come back from behind. I have no qualms about the Ravens. I think they are a really I think they're an innovative team. I wrote about this last year, something that really stood out to me. We noticed that the Ravens were running, had a man in motion on offense more than other teams. And we took a look at it. We have our video trackers that track motion, not just so pre-snap motion when the guy comes set and then motion at the snap. And the Ravens have run a motion, man in motion at the snap so much more often than anyone else. And we ran the numbers and found that this is a quantifiable edge, having a man in motion at the snap. And this is something that the Ravens were taking advantage of more than anyone else. So you have a team that they're a very analytics-friendly organization. You have a team that is looking for those edges, that is willing to play in an unorthodox style if that's going to give them an advantage. I am absolutely in on the Ravens as the second-best team. I think they are a very legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and I'm on everything except for I think that they are a 3 out of 4 machine. That's what they're going to do. They're going to grind that out. But you got to get on a hot streak against playoff calibers. The 3 out of 4 against regular season teams, I think there's a flaw. And the only thing I would rebut is on the when you're talking about those numbers, like the play action. When the play action is there, but against the Titans, when that was taken away and they had to throw, and I don't think you can get three or four playoff wins in a row without having to be in a we can't play action situation. At some time they're going to be in that, and Lamar Jackson's going to have to just spin it.
I think but there's a difference between being a traditional running team and the way we're doing a grinded out, like I think of the Titans like that, and being what the Ravens are, which are far more explosive. They were not able to come back in that scenario, but I don't think that means that they cannot come back in future similar scenarios.
They can. And listen, they do so many things so well. Yes, they're an absolute threat. I think we're probably 90% on the same page, and we're arguing about the last 10, which is what makes it fun. We're talking to Seth Balder from ESPN. Everyone's yelling at me to break, so let me give you my final four quickies. I'll start you with this.
Okay.
Lamar Jackson's career, when it's all said and done, is closer to Colin Kaepernick's or Patrick Mahomes?
Mahomes.
Oh, wow. Okay. We'll go with that. Do we get a 16-game season?
Yeah. I'll guess yes, I guess. Those questions are so hard, but sure.
Be an optimist. Yeah. We'll go with that. I wish they were going to training camp right now. I think that would be the smart move, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. All right, how many Super Bowls for Patrick Mahomes when it's all said and done? How many does he win?
3.
Okay, I'll take that. And finally, what are you binge watching to replace sports? You got any shows?
I'm a huge Survivor fan, so I was watching Survivor, but it ended. And now I'm kind of on a dry spell, actually. Yeah. Last time I was on the show, I answered Succession, so
yeah.
We haven't had like something like that we've hit. Yeah,
okay. I'll take the Survivor, though. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Hey, Seth, we love your work, man. Keep up the great work. Stay healthy, my friend, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Who's lost a tremendous amount of weight from last year, but still is a very big man.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the Program.
All right, start with the NFL. DeMarie Smith, the head of the NFLPA, when asked by HBO's Real Sports on a scale of 1 to 10, the likelihood of an NFL season. We've heard a lot of optimism, positivity. I mentioned that there doesn't seem to be anyone around the NFL talking about any kind of possible delay. Well, here's somebody. DeMarie Smith said, well, quote, well, UVA law graded on a curve, which is where he got his law degree. So I'm going to go with probably a 6, maybe a 7. Look, a lot depends on what happens with the other sports, and to say that we aren't looking at what's going on and going to be happening in basketball and baseball, and we're not looking at how they work through these things, I'd be lying to you if we're not, Smith said. So how about if I go a 6-7 on a curve?
That's not positive.
I mean,
it's realistic.
It's not a 2.
But it's, yeah.
It's not a 2.
Anyone thinking it's a slam dunk, that's not exactly a some guy off the street they're quoting there.
No. And so I think that is, you know, the first sign of pessimism we've seen out of the NFL. Jeffrey Ross, the Dolphins owner, a couple of days ago was like, oh, yeah, we're planning for the season, not only planning for the season, but planning for, you know, having people in the stands. Now, I want to be clear because there's another one that Arkansas said that they're planning on full venues everywhere. Well, you can plan on that now. It's a matter of, do you have full venues then? Right? Yeah. So let's not condemn everybody. I think it's a more responsible approach to speak with a little more caution in your words of like, okay, yeah, well, we're hoping for the best, preparing for the worst, right? That's what everybody should be doing. Arkansas says they're going to have full seats, you know. Some people are saying 50%. Ohio State's saying we think like 22,000 out of the 102,000 capacity. Everybody's saying something different. It's what they actually end up doing that is going to matter. But I do think treading a little bit more cautious might be, wise at this time.
Agreed.
But we'll see. Arkansas will not test all student athletes when they return to campus. They will test symptomatic athletes and athletes returning from hot spots. This according to AD Hunter Yurachek. Facilities will be sanitized thoroughly at the end of this week ahead of student athletes returning, he said. But, again, Arkansas being quite cavalier in a lot of their statements so far about how things are going to work when the kids get back out on campus and with the athletes. The NFL has tabled a proposal for a booth official who would aid calls by using video feed. This is something that's been kind of building towards it. But when the owners vote on the rules proposals in their conference call coming up tomorrow, they'll be looking at alternatives to booth officials. So that does not look like it's going to happen. I don't understand, like, what's the difference between a booth official and video replay?
Got me. And that there's a distinction without a difference, or a difference without a distinction, whatever, which one of those is accurate to me. I don't understand how you could have one and not the other.
To me, it just sounds to me like, okay, so what the guy's going to be there and he can just buzz down whenever. We don't go to replay. He just makes the decision. You know, not a challenge. We're just going to put it to a guy and say, okay, no challenges. Like, I don't understand how you keep it all together. At some point, we got to just play the game.
Yep.
So I'm okay. With the fact that they put that one on the table, that doesn't bother me, because I can't for the life of me figure out what exactly it's going to be, right?
Yeah, I and as you said, what's the distinction between the two? Well, we're going to try to find an alternative to this, which is going to end up being almost exactly the same as that. Either have it or don't have it, but
right.
I don't get the.
Couple of transfer notes. Georgetown guard Mac McClung, the top available transfer on the market. He is going to Texas Tech.
Chris
Big 12
Beard
gets stronger.
Getting it done.
Yeah, Chris Beard is getting it done. Texas Tech gets even stronger. As they have 15 a game, McClung averaged last year for Georgetown. Kentucky transfer Johnny Juzang, who was one of the top recruits last year, has received a waiver to play immediately next season at UCLA. It's interesting. Those waivers are being given out quite liberally these days. So I don't think that's shocking, but it'll be interesting to see how that ends up getting done. And I like this one. Phil Mickelson says he'd like to see the match become an annual event. I think we could showcase guys like Steph Curry and Michael Jordan or Tony Romo and Patrick Mahomes, who are all good golfers, elite talents, and have great personalities, Mickelson said. Those personalities are going to come out with this event, or you could have someone who just loves the game and is competitive. Hey, I mean, it was a big
That'd
hit.
Awesome.
Yeah, it'd be awesome with Mahomes.
Yeah. WHB.